Gospel reading continues in Matthew's Gospel in the 5th chapter, beginning with verse 38. Jesus is speaking. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evildoer. But if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give your cloak as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go the second mile. Give to everyone who begs from you, and do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you. You've heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so you may be children of your Father in heaven, who makes the sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the righteous and unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers and sisters, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. In our hearing, our speaking, our living. The two readings assigned for today continue with last week's theme of God's instructions for how we are to live together, giving us a snapshot of what it looks like when people live together in the ways that God desires. So Leviticus tells us, be holy. In Matthew's gospel, Jesus tells us, be perfect. Be holy. Be perfect. So would all of you who have figured out, who are holy and figured out how to be perfect, move to the balcony so the rest of us can keep working on this. Or maybe come up front and tell us your secret. What is going on here? Now, we already know Leviticus can cause a lot of trouble with certain passages. And the gospel reading today has historically also caused some trouble with its admonitions. So let's take a few minutes to do a little Bible study, okay? To unpack this a bit. A seminary student complained to his professor once, I never realized I could fall asleep on a treadmill until I did so while trying to read Leviticus. Animal sacrifice, skin diseases, bodily fluids, countless minute details of religious ritual and food rituals. This comes from a very different worldview than ours. There is truly some awful and terribly misunderstood stuff in the book. But there's also some very good stuff in it, too. And that's what we have today. God tells Israel that for them to survive, to thrive, then how they treat themselves and each other and those around them really matters. You shall leave some of your crop in the field for those who are hungry. You shall treat your workers fairly. No stealing, no slandering. We tend to think of holiness as those people far beyond us. They were born different. They're on a pedestal. We can't be like them. That's not what this holiness means. God tells them they would be holy when they were attentive to everyday acts done in love. Holiness, a Jewish rabbi and scholar wrote, consists of ordinary, everyday, godly acts, such as taking care of our families or looking after the rights of the poor and strangers, choosing honesty and truth. That's godly. Paying workers, treating people with disabilities with respect, refraining from malicious gossip, that's holy. Honoring elders, taking time for study and reflection, forgiveness, those are holy, sacred. It's not about moral purity. The flip side of it is that when we mistreat others, we are impeding our relationship with God. It all matters how we do what we do. I'm holy, God says, so you be holy too. When you treat others justly, you are imitating me in my holiness. And God was not simply speaking as individuals, but to the nation. Jesus drew from this passage. Jesus said, love your neighbor. He took the passage from Deuteronomy in the 6th chapter that said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and strength. Combine that with love of neighbor in this unique and wonderful way. But it comes from Leviticus. Jesus then spells out some of what that looks like. Here, too, we have to do a little bit of unpacking. Begins by talking about evil. It's often translated, do not resist evil. Our translation says evildoers or the evil one. But we know right away something's wrong with that translation because Jesus resisted evil at every turn and ultimately resisted it with his life. The better translation here of that word resist is do not resist violently. Do not fight violence with violence. Resist evil, but never resort to evil in doing so. The late Walter Wink wrote brilliantly about this passage, and I have used that work before, but I think it bears repeating because this passage has been used in harmful ways. Wink clarified some important cultural details, such as with verse 39, talking about striking someone on the right cheek. They would not have used the left hand to strike anyone. The left hand was considered unclean. So if you're going to strike someone with your right hand on the right cheek, it's a backslap. It's an insult. It's done to someone of lesser status. So Jesus is saying, if someone's going to treat you like that, give them the other cheek. That way it's an even fight. They have to treat you as an equal, and in doing so, actually bring shame upon themselves. Now, a huge caveat here. One of the ways this passage has been misused is when people, preachers especially, tell victims of domestic abuse or crime victims, or those denied their full rights to just put up with it. Don't resist, because Jesus said not to. We cannot say to victims of domestic violence or racism or any other form of societal violence to turn the other cheek. Jesus would not say that to people. Jesus resisted. He made a point of stopping a group of people from stoning a woman to death. He overturned the tables in the temple of those taking advantage of the poor. Jesus healed those no one else would touch. He upheld the dignity of all. And I would add, if you know someone suffering from abuse, we have people here who know how to help. Please reach out. Jesus is offering a more radical way to be faithful to God's law, a way that refuses to let anyone else define any other person as other, as unworthy. Verse 40, if you're getting sued for your underwear, give them your coat. Nobody was supposed to take somebody else's coat. Jesus is saying, just give it all and expose a corrupt system in the process. Verse 41, Roman soldiers frequently forced Jewish peasants to carry their 70-pound packs of gear. It was such an abusive kind of system, one hated by those who would get called into such duty, that even the Romans passed a law to limit it. You could only make someone carry that 70 pounds for 1 mile. Claim your dignity and your independence and go another mile, Jesus says. Verse 44, Jesus doesn't deny their enemies. He isn't naive, but he asserts that the best way to deal with them is through the power of love. Through asking, what is the most loving thing I can do in this situation? Erica Chenoweth is a professor of international studies in Colorado and a world-renowned expert on political violence and nonviolent resistance. At one point in her career, a few years ago, she was convinced that only violent resistance was effective. It was the only thing that had ever worked to change oppressive regimes and governments. When she was challenged to prove that belief, she studied major conflicts for the last 100 years, violent and nonviolent, around the world. And what she found stunned her. That nonviolent resistance is twice as likely to be effective, to bring about regime change, to end an oppressive rule as violent resistance, and that ratio is expanding. Peaceful tactics are more likely to have the best outcome and the best outcome in the long haul. Love your enemies, Jesus said. Another professor, Valerie Carr, said, in this dangerous new era, we reclaim love as an action. Love is a commitment to extend our will for the good of others, of our opponents, and of ourselves. When we love, even in the face of fear and rage, we can transform a relationship, a culture, and a country. Love becomes revolutionary. Jesus was a proponent of revolutionary love. Today is the observance of the 75th anniversary of the Japanese prison camps. Some of those survivors are speaking up, calling for an end to any thought of rounding up immigrants and banning refugees, because they know what that is like. Jesus calls us to love, even and especially when we are afraid. Finally, in verse 48, he concludes all of this with this instruction to be perfect. But Jesus wasn't talking about moral or ethical or behavioral perfection. The Greek word used here comes from the word telos, which means something closer to completion, wholeness. Here's the world as God sees it, Jesus said. Keep your eyes on this and don't give up. Keep growing in faith. Keep moving toward spiritual maturity, wholeness. Persist, Jesus is saying. We are to work toward that vision where goodness and potential are fulfilled. So why does any of this matter? Understanding these texts in this time. We know we're supposed to be good, right? On Thursday evening in Kernersville, right up the road, it was a small group apparently that met and that talked about the Muslim threat and how Muslims especially the peaceful, middle-of-the-road ones are plotting to overthrow our country. And apparently someone at this meeting said the only solution is to kill them. And a couple of other people said they are getting training in how to use weaponry. This is Kernersville. We can look around and see so many senseless acts of hatred, mind-numbing things happening. part of me wants to round those 20 people up, hog tie them in a room, put duct tape on their mouths, and make them listen 24/7 to the stories of refugees and immigrants who've come to this country. Let them meet the children, but I know it won't work, and I don't think that's what Jesus meant by nonviolence. But it sure would feel good. This is hard stuff. I don't know how to love those people. But I know Jesus wants me and all of us to figure out what it means to try. We must resist, but not with violence. I also learned this week, spoke to a young Muslim woman who was in the march in D.C. She'd never done anything like that before. And she came back here and immediately signed up to learn how to mentor young people and to help all people learn about nonviolence, learn about their own worth. I think that's being holy. This community is rallying to help the toddler mauled by the dogs. That's being holy. Persist in the good, Jesus says. We persist when we refuse just to hand over our dignity. We persist when we acknowledge that we participate in systems that hurt people and keep them down. We persist when we say enough. We persist when we acknowledge there's violence within us that we need God to heal. We persist when we stand up to hate with the limitless power of God's love. We persist when we push ourselves to have the risky conversations that we know are going to be tough, but that we must learn to have. We persist when we don't simply acknowledge what's good and loving, but we do it. Be persistent, Jesus says, like a tiny flower growing up in the crack of a rock. It grows strong enough till that rock splits. Be persistent like the trickle of water that becomes a stream and then a creek and then a river and then it forms a canyon. Persist in love, not just in words, but in deed, Jesus says. Be holy, be whole, persist. Amen.